Hey, cabin lovers, welcome back to another episode of the My Dream Log Cabin podcast. I'm so excited to have you here with me. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland, and this podcast is brought to you by Caribou Creek Handcrafted Log Homes.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to My Dream Log Cabin podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sutherland. Today's a unique episode. I'm actually here in person with Rick Phoebus. He's the owner and founder of Off Grid Unlimited, and we're going to be starting to have a little bit in-depth conversation about living off-grid or building a cabin off-grid. And I know I told you guys this was coming. I was really excited to bring him on the show. What's really cool is we might be having more than just one conversation, because the more we got into it, we realized there's a lot to talk about here. So we can't really smash it all into 20 minutes, but we're going to do our best to, you know, give you as much as we can. Today, we want to start with the basics, which is land. You know, we were talking earlier, Rick, about some of the hangups that you see a lot in the field. But before we dive in, will you please share with the audience a little bit about kind of how did you get into this in your background?
It's a pure accident. So I'm retired Army, but when I was younger, before I went in the Army, way back in the day that I almost can't remember, my family decided to buy a hunting cabin in the middle of the Appalachians with no power, no running water, a spring with a pipe out of the ground, all the basics. The wood that he had, the house was the wood that I split. I was just a kid. And so I've been living off grid since I was 10, 11. At certain points, the Army had me stationed in nice suburbs throughout the U.S., but then on deployments and FDXs, I went right back to it. So I've been in the desert in the Southwest. I was in Arizona, San Antonio, down in Texas, Florida, Hawaii. I've been in the jungles. I mean, the Army kicked me all over the place. So after being in all those places, things started to click. My mind started to absorb the things that I saw, and it led me to come out of retirement here. I saw a lot of people just show up, and they didn't have really much of a plan. And when you show up and you have no plan, and you're living in a bed, sliding bed camper on your property, and you're looking at it thinking, okay, what's next? It can absolutely overwhelm you and throw you completely for a loop. And that's why I do it.
Yeah. So there's a trend. I think we were talking about this trend with, you know, YouTube and people selling all of their stuff and moving to, you know, this rural place. So we see it a lot up here in Bonners Ferry and surrounding areas. But sometimes they get themselves into a little bit of a pickle. And so we want to talk about that a little bit now. I know that most of the listeners with Caribou Creek probably wouldn't end up in this position, but I still think this conversation is relevant because there are, let's talk about buying land. You know, we've done an episode before, we've had realtors on, we've talked about buying land, but there's a little bit of things to think about when it comes to navigating that situation. So tell me, what are some key things people need to be thinking about when they're shopping for land online, or maybe they're even just buying sight unseen, which I know some people do?
Water and the direction of the sun. How much blocks the sun if you ever plan to do solar? If you want to do wind, obviously you need a spot that has sustained wind over time. If you have water and you have dreams about doing hydroelectric, you need to make sure you have at least 12 feet vertical distance at one of your property. That's another trick. You have to make sure that the water we're going to use for your hydroelectric is within the boundaries that you own. You can't go on your neighbor's property and throw a pipe.
Are you sure?
Well, I wish I could, especially when there's a waterfall we can tap into, but no, we can't do that. But simple thing, don't see, unless you're on the ground, like your house that you're going to move to is at the base of the north-facing slope. North-facing slope means, guess what? The sun is going to be on the other side of that mountain. So you can't simply level the mountain. You have to plan these things out. I can only do so what? Cutting the trees down.
Yeah.
And no matter how many solar panels I put on a house, if there's a mountain between me and the sun in the winter, when the sun is at 20 degrees, December 21st, that's your magic point. If you see sun on your property December 21st, then you have a good shot. You can pull off solar. If you don't have sun on your property December 21st, then there's going to be a period of time every winter that you have nothing except the generator. Mm-hmm. And generators can get expensive. And when I say generator, here's the other mistake. A lot of people that live off a generator in the winter buy an off-the-shelf generator for one of the chain stores. It's not going to work long-term. They're only made to support camping trips. They're not made to sustain a family of 2, 3, or 4, or 8. So in some cases, we've supported families of 10. In those cases, you need a good standby generator in the winter, but we can do solar. If you have a south-facing slope and you have a good view through the sky, just realize some of your trees might need to come down.
And a blue sky is not necessarily going to give you your full solar. You need the sun to actually aid perpendicular to your solar panels. And aiming solar panels directly south is great
once a day, because that's when you get the maximum off one set of panels facing south. You want to set east, south, and west to sustain power throughout the entire day. When those things take experience to recognize, you can jump off the cliff, go off grid, you can have a few solar panels. But then you realize, wait, in the morning I had no power, in the evening I had no power, and those things get added in later, where if you had the conversation with someone up front, you save all that time.
Yeah, I think that was the big takeaway was, you know, a lot of times people buy land and they're looking for, you know, the view or the experience the land offers. But if you don't know what you don't know, you wouldn't think to ask. And that's why we're bringing this to their attention, because it's an important conversation. And a realtor who's experienced in selling land, they may not be experienced in what types of things you need in order to be able to put your offer in system, whether that be whatever type of energy source you want. You just need to know what you're doing. So let's talk about that. Like, what would be, you mentioned having south-facing angles for the sun for solar.
Let's talk about the perfect off-grid site.
Okay, let's talk about
it. Let's just get right to that, because I think that would say to people a lot at home, this is what you want to look for. You want to be aluminum elevated above the trees if you can on a hillside. You want a space level enough so that you can spread out a homestead and do these things with the water shedding off to the sides, so you're not compromising foundations, roads. You need to think about water up front. You need to think about, do you want more than one source of power? If you have a south-facing slope and you have shelter, you have good drainage around the place, you have water, then you need to think about, you know, do I need to cut some of the trees down? Do I need to contact the Idaho Forester or a forester, have them cruise the property and determine if they can thin the property out? Most people that move in don't even realize one of the very best first thing you can do is contact a forester, especially from Idaho Forestry up here. You know, I know any of these guys, they will come out, give you an idea of what you have as far as forest composition. And not only can you view your property, so I, from Off Grid Unlimited, can give you solar, you can also make money from the timber that you've now thinned out of your property. Plus, you now thin the property out for fire heat. You'll accomplish a lot of things up front just knowing that. That's literally one of the first things on our checklist when someone contacts us, is have you contact the forester to get the place thinned to mitigate fire and look at the rest.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned water, and you kind of told me a story earlier about somebody who bought a property thinking it was great because it had water, but it was more of a creek rather than fast or flowing stream. What should they look for when it comes to water sources?
So here's the best property you can ever get. Always, 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 always look for a spring. If you have a sustained spring that lasts throughout the year, and if you're lucky, you look for a spring in September when the conditions are dry and the water aquifers and the water table is lower. If you see water coming from a spring on your property in August, September, October, then you have sustained water that does many things. One, you can do a gravity feed water system. And this is important when you look at power systems, because we literally have to design most of the systems that we put in, solar, wind, hydroelectric, based on how your water is captured. If you have a 900-foot well with 3 gallons per minute, I have to use a substantial amount of power to draw that water up out of the ground to fill a pressure tank. If you, however, in an ideal situation, have a spring 100, 200, 300, in some cases, you know, a half mile above your house on your property, you can actually completely live without pumping water. It's just gravity fed, and the pressure builds up to your house. I actually have it up on my toes. It's the best way to do it, because then you reserve all of your power for the things that you want to use it for, light, certain appliances, although we can get into that in another episode. Get you conversation.
Wood posts and timbers are damaged from being outdoors without any protection. Water is the enemy. Cabin posts and logs absorb water through the end grains, which create wood decay, rotting, and an easy entrance for insect infestation. We put shingles on a roof to protect it. Nortec copper caps do the same for your log home posts and timbers, helping them last a lifetime. They also enhance the look and feel of your log home with copper accents. We have multiple designs to match the look of your log home, outside and inside. We also have copper railing covers to protect your logs and your hands from cuts and slivers. Nortec also has kick plates to protect your doors and some of the best leveling jacks to make floors level and strong. Prevent rotting while making your log home or cabin beautiful with Nortec Copperworks. From standard round and square caps to custom-shaped timbers and railings, Nortec has you covered. Visit NortecCopperworks.com to see all the Nortec products. Don't let your home or cabin sit unprotected another day. Visit NortecCopperworks.com today.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that was really good. And then as far as wind goes, I mean, well, I guess the question I would ask, Rick, is do you think that people are going to be in a position where they're making a decision about what type of energy source they want on their property? Rick, do you think that would
be... It takes time. The problem is with... Okay, so sun is easy. You either have sun or you don't.
That decision can be easily made up front. Once you get into the property, if it's possible to do sun, you have a south-facing slope, or even an east or west, then we get solar in, we can get that system to give you a foundation. Now, a year or two later, when you've observed the weather conditions and you've observed the wind, you've walked your entire property, discovered where the springs and the water come from. You've walked to see if your spring freezes, because that is a huge issue with hydroelectric. Is your water source going to stay unfrozen with the spike like this last winter?
Mm-hmm.
I got negative 29 up at my own location. My water was still running because it was coming directly out of the ground, warmer than the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to observe those things. It takes a lot of notes. Just a visual. Constant visual log. You have to monitor and watch your property just to see those things. Solar is easy if you have sun. After that, generally, we try to do hybrid systems where we throw in hydroelectric or wind. And that is down to the construction and the design, the shaping the property so that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, when there are 6 feet of snow on the ground, do you really want to walk 200 feet to a barn to tend livestock or chickens or whatever it is? Or do you want to have things centrally located so that it's about conservation of work, conservation of energy? You're not expending a ton of energy to do the basic routine things on a farm or on a homestead. And those are a lot of things get lost in the initial real estate transaction.
Yeah. And another thing too, I mean, this is just coming from my own experience. When you get onto a property and you walk it, you think, oh my gosh, this looks like the perfect place for my garden or for my chickens or for whatever. And you're basing that off of the visuals, off the aesthetics. But, you know, one of the things I've learned being in this business, working with mostly, I would say, Stuart over at Caribou Creek. He's our draftsman. I bet you have this skill too. I can tell just by listening to you talk. He can walk out to property and it could be completely treed. He could walk that property and then by the end of it, look at it and be like, this is where you need to build your house. And it may be the most out of the blue area. Like we had that happen with a property that a client said, oh, this is where my house is going to be. They've already cleared it, ready to go. And he walked out and he said, you know, I think it's great, but I think it would be better over here. And then in the end, they designed the house to have the views in every direction were just stunning. And it was true. It was the best place to put that. But that takes a skilled eye. So that actually leads me to my next question. If somebody is looking for property and maybe they live in Arizona or California and they're looking to relocate and their property that they're considering is up in these neck of the woods, would you consider doing a property walk for them?
Oh, we love to
look at it ahead of time.
We do that all the time. So we will do an initial assessment. That's an initial site visit. We've been doing that for 4 years. We also do it after the fact. So we can do an inspection on an existing system. I mean, strange fact, we seem to be the only business that I know of that actually goes in and will repair, modify, and upgrade an existing solar system or hydroelectric system or wind system. It's because in most cases, it just needs a modification. You know, a few more solar panels, or someone built the system, but they didn't understand the difference between solid copper strand wire or fibrate, you know, and how DC electricity propagates across the line. Voltage loss, distance, gauging, all of those things are important when you build a system. Sometimes it's lost when you watch a YouTube video or you read a book. So we do inspections. We will also modify, we'll fix existing or older system. And we will go put on into a property in the very beginning. And in some cases, Idaho Forest Troop will actually contact us after they get contacted by the original homeowner. And we will go in right as the forester goes in and they consult and literally walk with the forester and say, yep, that's the spot. Put the house there. And then we'll tell him, all right, off in this direction, let me mark the trees. And we'll mark the trees. The forester cuts it. Everything is beautiful. The pad goes in place. The grading is right. And then the roads come.
I kind of figured you guys did that. Is there anything else you can think of that we should touch on when it comes to this topic? Or do you feel like we've covered this topic pretty well?
I can be a dead horse very well. So there we could go in so many different directions. I thought when I started this, it would be simple. It is not simple. There are so many things to factor in. You can't even imagine the range of things that I've seen in just a few years that I've done this business. I mean, mine shafts. Who would think somebody wants to build a concrete structure in a mine shaft and run solar into it?
All right, Dan. So I think we pretty much covered the basics that you want to be thinking about if you're going to plan to do an off-grid system with your log cabin. But just for fun, to wrap up, Rick's got some amazing stories when it comes to things he's seen. So I'm going to have him share one of his most bizarre stories just for entertainment purposes.
Bizarre. There are so many directions I can go with that. I don't know that we could cover that in a 10-hour conversation. But I will start with the one where I met my wife. She bought a quote-unquote off-grid property. Great property. Beautiful property. Spring-fed, southern exposure. The solar system comprised basically 8 of the most mismatched truck batteries, car batteries. I think there might have been, I don't know, a tractor battery and a couple of other batteries mixed into it. The solar system consisted of 2 little tiny solar panels that were powering the entire house. And she moved into that place in the beginning of winter. And our son, or my stepson, Gabe, is autistic. And he is a handful. And it takes a lot of observation and time. And Don lived up there with Gabe alone through that first winter. Her solar system failed. The 2 little solar panels that were, you know, were able in the photo did not have the capability in the winter with the low sun angle to keep the batteries charged. And then the batteries were failing. They were just old. So there are cases where people will call us in dead panic in the middle of winter. And we're throwing everything in a four-wheel drive and plowing with the bumper at the truck to get up the side of a mountain. And that's actually how I met Dawn. I was impressed. She was out there. She was so desperate for me to get up there. She was actually hand shoveling tire tracks down the hill towards me by herself. But there are other things. There's the mountaintop retreats. There's the mine shaft, tree houses. I mean, I don't even know where to go. Islands, okay, seem to be a new thing last year. I got contacted at least 5 times last year for folks who wanted to take over islands. Oh. They wanted me to build portable solar systems. Actually, there was one client that wasn't on an island, same time frame. I think there were maybe 6 total. The thing about portable solar systems, solar panel are like kites. If the wind hit the solar panel and it's not mounted or fixed to something, it will fly. And it's easy to break solar panels. So what looks good in good weather may not look good when the weather turns. So just be careful when you think things through and especially consider weather and seasons.
Yeah. So how far do you go? Like, let's say somebody is looking at a property that's already got an off-grid system, in theory, and they want to have you take a look at it in their like inspection period. How far radius around Bonner Surrey do you go to?
So far, most of the work has been limited to Washington, Idaho, Montana. I've done a little work in Utah, but things have come online recently with some of the real estate agents. We may actually be flying out of state. We've been contacted people in New York. We've been contacted by people in Australia, South America. But obviously, that's not very cost-effective for us. We'd like to stay centrally located and support the local economy. It's just too logistically difficult in most cases. And I don't have a Learjet on standby. We're tired of it.
Not yet, any.
Get to that for you. That'd be another conversation.
Wonderful. Well, what's the website where people can connect with you?
Offgridunlimited.com.